I was at my local Goodwill, the closest one on I-10 right there. And normally I get albums there to go ahead and sell, and they had some great albums when I showed up. They were all $5 plus.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they tripled the price on them.
I've been noticing that. It's like they tend to follow trends or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or they see what's selling.
I think what it is, somebody new will get hired in the back, and they'll start changing the pricing and stuff. So,
because, yeah, that's the same thing with, like, the VHSs.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time, I was getting them for a quarter.
Yeah, they're 79 cents, 99 cents.
Yeah, so. A couple of them are, like, $1.99, and you're like, when did this go from being 50 cents? Like, it's gone up four times.
Yeah, how's the market value increasing on old technology?
It's just because people are buying them here and there. But I mean, I see a lot of people, not people like looking to like accentuate a horror collection, but I see people in there just shopping movies.
Right.
And I guess a lot of them are just hitting up VHSs.
The cheaper way to get a movie.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said before, if you can get, I got Young Frankenstein for 50 cents.
Right.
So if it plays through one time.
Yeah, you just saw it for 50 cents.
I just saw it for 50 cents. And if it never plays again, then whatever.
And also, they had some special discounts at another one last Friday, I think. $1.50 Laserdisc. So I increased my Laserdisc collection a little bit.
Sweet.
I got a player in the back now, so I can actually watch them. And, you know, I was showing my kids, it's like, see this DVD of Aliens? See these two giant Laserdiscs? They hold the same amount of information. Yeah. You have to get up and flip it over twice.
It's amazing, like, the kind of old, like, just where you go. So, back in it was in the 90s. I used to work for Radio Shack whenever I got was in high school and just out of high school. And what they would do is seasonally, because certain stores at Christmas time were busier than others, in the store in the Galleria, they'd open up a separate storefront that was just toys. It was toys, maybe like little pocket TVs, just general trinkety stuff, mm-hmm. but no parts and no Radio Shack, just all their toys.
Right.
So I got pulled from another store to go work at the Galleria from basically a little before Thanksgiving, so like early November through December. Well, when they close that up, they've got their core staff, so then they shuffle you back.
Yeah.
So I went from my home store that was near my house, shuffled over to the Galleria. When I got moved to the Galleria, that manager got pissed because it was going to leave him shorthanded, but I didn't have anything to do with the move. I just got called one day. And so I got shuffled over to another store. I was like, yeah, this ain't working. I don't like it. So then this one guy who had been a Radio Shack manager opened a store over off Southwest Freeway. It was called Phone Warehouse. And they sold cell phones and it was all phones.
Right.
Not even accessories, just telephones. Mostly cell phones, beepers, and like business lines type stuff. And that was an abysmal place to work. It sucked so bad.
What was that? Was that at the time of the bag phones?
So
it hadn't really taken off yet.
Yeah, like there were still some like Motorola brick phones, and then there was like the super hot like Nokia was like the size of like an iPhone 7 now. It's like 8 inches tall and like maybe 2.5 inches wide, and it was like really, really tall.
Yeah.
That was those days.
I remember when the Razr came out, that's when everything changed. The flip phone, that was the shit, man.
But the store next to us sold Laserdiscs. It was a high-end audio video, but they didn't sell TVs or anything. All they sold was discs.
They had a lot of Laserdiscs they put out, too.
And the funny thing was, like, half the time the player didn't work. So, like, whenever they'd be screening stuff or whatever,
it was shut down.
It was shut down. And I was like, man, this isn't going to last. They're going to have to come up with something.
Well, you know, you're sitting there watching a movie with a VHS. You just sit there and finish watching it. With a Laserdisc, you got to get up, you got to turn it over, put it back in.
Mm-hmm.
Got to hope neither side scratches or anything, because then you're screwed.
Right.
Well,
and that's why I actually enjoy watching VHSs now more than DVDs, is because there's no menus.
I fall asleep watching TV all the time.
You shove it in, and it goes.
Right. Well, I fall asleep watching TV all the time, so, you know, when a DVD ends, if it's something like the season of the League, my son was about to choke me the other night because I fell asleep watching the League, and the menu screen just keeps playing the theme song over and over again.
It's
annoying. And he was having nightmares about it, you know? And VHS just shuts off.
Yeah, it stops, rewinds for you, shuts itself down.
I mean, just find a top loader, I'll be doing good. That's what I want to find, a top loader VCR. They used to have one at Halliburton. I remember, you know, I'm sitting in a boardroom one day, one of the most technologically advanced oilfield services company in the world, and I look over, and there's a top loader VCR with a tube TV attached to it in the corner.
That old stuff, man.
Yeah, well, they still had old tapes that, you know, they had never been converted, and they'd use it for that.
That's cool. Not the kind of stuff you'd want to watch. Probably like sexual harassment videos.
Yeah. Remember, I finally got them when I became their technology manager to redo the brine safety video and stuff. Because the one we had, my boss, who was my boss for 15 years, he was like a young yard hand with a porn stash and everything. It was like, I want to say it was almost 20-year-old tape. And we still use it as the same brine safety video. It was horrible, man.
Wow. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Everybody, welcome to Scary Dad Podcast. This is episode 37, entitled All in the Family. So we might have to use some Archie Bunker music somewhere.
Those were the days.
We're going to talk about some killer families in pop culture media.
Sometimes it's in the genes, you know. It's not just one crazy bastard in the family. It's everybody.
Exactly. So this is dropping on June 26th, 2017. I wanted to say 16, but that we'd have to be super wizards to make that happen. So the 26th of June 2017. So let's drop into the history segment real quick. Talk about old business.
Yeah.
So on this date, in 1870, Christmas was declared a federal holiday in the United States. So prior to this,
they didn't have to give you the day off.
They didn't have to give you the day off. Now, I didn't read much into this, but I've heard that, like, in the late, you know, 1860s or 1870s, we got kind of a bunch of, not a bunch of, but we got several federal holidays because it was kind of an attempt to pull the country back together after the Civil War. Mm-hmm. So if everybody from North and South had something in common. And interesting thing is, like, that up until World War II, actually, so you think about how long it was, but Thanksgiving wasn't really celebrated much in the South.
Right.
It was a Yankee holiday.
Yeah.
And for everybody else, it was just a normal Thursday. And it wasn't until World War II, whenever it was kind of everybody was kind of just being drawn together, to fight that global scourge, that it kind of became more of a accepted nationwide. Right. So, a little interesting thing there. 1936, the Focke-Wulf FWG-1, the first practical helicopter flies. You look at a picture of it, it looks like an airplane with a helicopter propeller at the top.
Yep. I remember that.
1948, Shirley Jackson's The Lottery is published in the New York Times and or in New Yorker magazine and makes everybody pissed. So The Lottery, if you're not familiar with it, we read it when I was in school, but basically there's a lottery, and whoever gets chosen at the end gets stoned to death.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very vibrant storyteller, so a lot of people got really upset at the violence in this. Shirley Jackson's also known for The Haunting of Hill House, which is one of the most famous ghost stories ever written. Mm-hmm. 1974, moving towards the apocalypse, the first UPC was used on a pack of Wrigley's gum. So, interesting that up until now there was no UPC codes, then now there is, but now you gotta buy a scanner. Now everything's UPC'd.
Oh, yeah. Well, and most of the apps like eBay, Amazon, you can use the UPC for whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Amazon, I love. You can actually just look at the front of a box, and it'll find it on Amazon for you, give you some pricing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eBay needs to go ahead and get that taken care of quick. You know, speaking of gum, the other day I was all excited, because I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but Stripes gum. You remember the Stripes of the Zebra?
Mm-hmm.
I saw some at a store the other day.
Oh, wow.
I'm very excited. I used to love that gum.
Yeah, it, for like 5 seconds.
So I bought a pack, and the flavor just dissipates in no time. It's still the same.
It was Fruit Stripe, and what was the other one that was just like gone like that? there was another one I remember that, like, get all excited
Cruise
about.
Cruise Chance needs to love seeing that in the store, man.
All right, notable births. 1904, Peter Lorre. He's in all kinds of horror movies. Yep. A lot of Hammer films. He's that kind of bug-eyed little guy.
Mm-hmm.
1956, gave us the soulful stylings of Chris Isaak.
Yay.
Notable deaths. This date, Liz Claiborne. I only threw that in there because as I'm looking at this, there's certain brands out there that are named for people, and yeah. this is a brand that's named for a specific person.
Yeah.
That it really never occurred to me that it was a real person. Like, it was just, it sounded
Made
exotic.
Up. Yeah.
And, like, Liz Claiborne doesn't, but like Estee Lauder and stuff. Oh, yes. You think about stuff like that, it's like, well, what are we going to name our perfume? I don't know, like, come up with some French name and let's throw it on there and sell it. But these were actual people. And I don't know why, it was not unrecent. It was only like last 5 or 10 years where I was just like, wow.
Yeah, Estee Lauder sounds like it could be Latin for face spackle.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah. Let's look up horse piss in a Latin different language and see what comes up.
It's a beautiful name.
So that is the history segment. That is old business. Let's talk about new business.
Yes. Got a little bit of news today. Got movie news and some other things. One I wanted to bring up is a sad day in the genre whenever somebody passes, but Stephen First. That name I was familiar with, but I didn't realize who it was. I didn't have a face to put to the name. But Stephen First in the horror genre has been involved with such horror and science fiction movies as The Unseen in 1981, Silent Rage in 1982, Class Reunion the day after in 83, Little Bigfoot 2, The Journey Home. I remember Little Bigfoot 1 very well. I don't remember 2 too much. Babylon 5, where he was also an actor on Babylon 5 and played Vercato, which I was looking to see if I could find the figure real quick to see if I recognize it as him. But Deadly Delusions in 99, Echoes of Enlightenment. 2006, Basilisk, the Serpent King. He really enjoyed doing horror a lot. But what a lot of people didn't realize is Stephen First is also Kent Dorfman from Animal House.
Flounder.
Where he got his flounder. That's where he got his start, which is very sad to see that he's passed away. So
we actually mentioned him on the last show.
Okay, yeah.
We were talking about Otter.
Yeah.
But
he died at the age of 62. So rest in peace, Mr. First. In other movie news, the Godzilla sequel, they've released some details, which I thought was pretty cool. Filming is going on right now. It's not going to be released until, I want to say, 2018, if I'm not mistaken. It's being directed by Michael Dougherty, who also directed Krampus.
Okay.
So it's got a whole bunch of very well-versed actors, including Ice Cube's son, O'Shea Jackson Jr. He's going to be in it also. The new story is going to follow the heroic efforts of the cryptozoological agency called Monarch as its members face off against a battery of God-sized monsters, including Godzilla, who collides with Mothra, Rodan, and his ultimate nemesis, King Ghidorah. They're bringing them all back for this movie, which I'm pretty excited about. Yeah, I think that's really cool. Filming is going on in Atlanta, and actually it's 2019 is when it'll finally be released.
So have you seen the most recent Godzilla?
No, I didn't see the last one.
I
saw the one before that, which made me not want to see the last one.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm just curious, because I didn't... again, just being kind of the movie purist and growing up loving Godzilla, but the Godzilla that I'm most familiar with would be the cartoon Godzilla.
Yeah.
With the little, you know,
yeah.
With the little son of Godzilla that bounced around on the ship and stuff.
Yeah.
But Godzilla had that look on all the Japanese where, you know, he stood upright. He looked kind of like a combination of a Tyrannosaurus and a Brontosaurus in the same, you know.
Yeah, the facial structure of the Brontosaurus and the body of the Tyrannosaurus.
Right. And then whenever they changed it to, like,
the sleek looking
Jurassic
dragon
Park,
thing.
Yeah, Jurassic Park dragon or whatever. I was like, it just doesn't have the same appeal. So,
well, just like the reason I didn't see the Power Rangers movies, because Power Rangers is supposed to be campy. It's not supposed to be so damn serious. You know, and that's one of the things I loved about it. You know, when they change stuff like that, it just, it, Me being the purist, it just takes away from it. Okay, I want to go through some of the summer releases we got to look forward to since it's getting hot as hell out there.
Good.
In June, we'll be looking at Alien Arrival, which is going to be in some theaters, and limited releases of The Bad Batch. And one I read about today, which sounds like a really odd movie. It's supposed to be incredibly brutal, to where they had a rated X rating at first, and they had to scale it back. A Beginner's Guide to Snuff.
I would actually follow the guy who, I believe it's the same guy. It's a snuff films. He said that it's been banned and everything.
Yeah, yeah. It's supposed to be like really gory, like over the top.
That guy posts some stuff on Twitter that I'm just like, oh my God.
It's left
theaters. I'm not squeamish. Yeah. if I'm going like, whoa.
It's a little much. Select theaters we're going to have in July, A Ghost Story, which I think I've seen some previews. It looks like it's a good storyline as far as what it's going to be about. And Super Powerless, which I haven't read about yet, but it's some science fiction comedy that's going to be coming out in July also.
Okay.
Another one in July is going to be Wish Upon, a horror movie, which I've it didn't look too well. But it's supposed to be a nationwide release. You know, a lot of movies are sucking right now so far. And I read the other day, three movies are coming down this weekend, which is last weekend, or 2 weekends ago. When we air this, the Tupac story, 47 meters or whatever it is, and one other one, where for the screenings for the critics, they had to agree not to release any reviews until the Saturday after it was released, because they knew the movies were going to suck so
like
bad.
The Mummy is pretty much dead on arrival.
But, you know, I was talking to somebody that watched it this morning, and he was telling me how, you know, it was real weird. I'm watching it, and, you know, they show the hand from the creature of the Black Lagoon and all this stuff. I said, well, you know, they're going to have a Dark Avengers, you know, that's why they give. Oh, that's why they had all those clues. And he started going through with me some of the things that they were tying together. So I'd like to see that aspect of it. So, but
no, for sure. But like, it was apparently, because I read a review on it that was basically that it seemed as if it was written by committee. And they're like, well, if you look at the list of writers, there was a lot of writers, but it's like they all sent in their parts, and then they all filmed them, and then put them together without anybody reading them. And it was just too disjointed and fast and moving, and you didn't quite know what was going on, and you didn't really care about the characters, and, you know, it was just kind of like boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And it was like, if you're trying to, like, set up a universe, you need to dial it back and make it a little bit more.
You have to be able to take it in and process it and everything.
And that was one of those things, you know, I've mentioned it on either the last show or the one before, how, you know, Bill Moseley, I follow him on Twitter, and he posted a question. He's like, what do you think needs to happen to bring horror back? And a lot of people were posting this and that, whatever. And I said heart. You know, a lot of these big franchises, like Halloween, independent movie. Friday the 13th, independent movie. Jaws, blockbuster movie, had the budget, but it was such a disaster that it should have been shelved.
Yeah.
It should have been canned because it was just such a over budget mess. But the director and the producers believed in it enough to make it the little engine that could, and it turned into something huge. But you couldn't just come up with an idea like Tornado Sharks. You can't just be like, you know, like back in the day, if you wanted to make Sharknado, you'd have to make a movie, like you'd have to figure out a way to make it. You couldn't just send it off to your IT guy and have him render you tornado sharks.
Yeah, throw in some sharks in there.
And with software being the way it is, a lot of independent filmmakers are making really good movies in their living rooms or in, you know, in their offices or whatever, with CGI and stuff. Like, I saw this one. It was just a short film on YouTube yesterday. It was a zombie short. I haven't seen anything original with zombies in a long time. But this one was like maybe 3 minutes, 4 minutes long, and it brought tear to your eye. And I'll share the link, but I'll basically tell you what it was. So basically, it starts off, there's a family, there's a father, a wife, and a little baby. And the wife is dead. And the baby's, you know, the father's holding the baby. He looks down at his arm, and he's got a bite. So he looks at his watch, and he starts calculating what it's going to take. And he looks at a map, and he sees where the safe zone is. So he puts the baby in the backpack, and then he starts just picking stuff up. So he picks up, he finds, he either kills an animal or he finds something and he puts a bag. He's got a bag full of guts. And then he, you know, he gets a stick and then he gets a balloon and he ties it or whatever. And he basically, he's got the bag of guts on the end of the stick. He's got the balloon tied right here. Mm-hmm. So he dies. You see him, he falls down and he dies. And then he gets up and he's got the guts on the end of the stick and the balloon flying from left to right keeps him from veering off course and he walks straight after the guts. And whenever the baby starts crying, he turns its head and he like sniffs around or whatever. But then the balloon catches his attention and keeps him walking forward. And he walks into the safe zone and then they shoot him down and he falls over and they go and check and they find the baby with a note and they're just like,
it's an amazing story, man.
But he set himself up to where he could get the baby to safety even though he knew he wasn't going to make it.
Right.
And it was just like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Well, you know, one thing that I find is too many
but
movies...
But that's heart.
Well, it's purity. And too many movies want to cater to people that enjoy other genres also, not just horror. And that's one way that just things stray. I don't need a love interest story in a horror movie. I just need scary shit that makes me jump.
Right.
Exactly. And there's no purity to it. Because they want to try to make as much money as possible and bring everybody into it. What they don't realize is if you stay pure with it and stick with what the people in the genre want, it'll bring other people to it. If it's a successful movie, they'll come. So,
absolutely.
Some more that we got coming up in July. Valerian, The City of a Thousand Planets.
I saw the previews for that. That looks cool.
The Gracefield Incident, which is going to be in some theaters also. It's limited release, though. And The Untamed, which I heard about that one. That one's supposed to be pretty good. In August, the day after my birthday, we have The Dark Tower coming out. And Lycan, which is a horror science fiction movie in some theaters. Then later on in August, we got Annabelle, The Creation, which I have a feeling that movie's going to suck. That's what, because I have a feeling it's going to be PG-13. I haven't seen what the rating is going to be yet, but... Then we got Polaroid, a horror movie that's going to be released nationwide, which I'm not totally familiar. I can guess what it's about from the title, but we'll see. And then in September...
Shake it.
It drops September 8th of 2017. So that will close out our summer and our hurricane season. Last bit of news I have, and while the guys at Scary Dad normally choose to stay away from politics, being that this involves one of our greatest horror icons, I figured I'd go ahead and touch on it a little bit. But our lovely friend that we mention often, Stephen King, is in the news, believe it or not. Stephen King is well known that he's very quick to send out his political beliefs. He doesn't mind telling people how he feels about things. Stephen King has been blocked by our president of the... Our horror icon has been blocked by the most powerful man in the country from reading his tweets. And Stephen put this morning, I think, his tweet was, "Oh my God, I've been blocked by Trump and can't see his tweets. I'm going to kill myself now."
The funny thing is, I don't follow Trump, but I do follow King.
Yeah.
And so I'll see... King trolls him. I mean, like, it's... I'm definitely not being like, well... I mean, you gotta have a little thicker skin than that if you're gonna be, like, the most powerful man in the world and you can't deal with the...
He was able to annoy him to the point where he's locked him, dude. Think about that.
Dude, it's Donald Trump. Donald Trump is getting trolled globally all day, every day, by millions and millions of people. But Stephen King managed to piss him off enough.
Well, I went ahead and went through I went through 50 altogether to try to pick out five that I liked. But here are some of Stephen King's tweets to Donald Trump that kind of drove him nuts. This is my favorite one. Number one, "There hasn't been a novelty act this annoying since Alvin and the Chipmunks." I just thought that was just classic, man. I love that one. "Donald Trump is like the crazy ranting uncle you hope your friends will never meet," which is pretty cool. Now we get into somewhere he kind of threw a little bit of his movies into it. "Populist demagogues like He Who Must Not Be Named aren't a new thing. See the Dead Zone, published 37 years ago." So that was a cool one. Here he kind of pretends he's quoting the Bible. "From the Book of Republicans, 'Lo, we have many assholes running for president. Let us consider and pick the biggest.' And so it was done." That was classic stuff, man. And number five, "Trump's proposed cabinet is the worst in American history." And this is why this one was picked. a motley crew of plunder monkeys. Is how he referred to Donald Trump's cabinet, our good friend Stephen King.
Oh, Stephen.
He's not going to hold his mouth, man.
Oh, I do.
He doesn't have to.
Shit. Oh, it's all pure entertainment, man. It's hilarious. And it's all, it's like you hear political theater. It's all theater, but yeah. As I just...
Only thing that changes is the date. That's the way I look at it. No matter
who
is it.
Oh, for sure. And like I said, we don't talk political or anything. Like I ignore it mostly. I block it. I don't engage. People get their blood pressure up over it. It's just not worth it because they're gonna do what they're gonna do, and there's not much you can do about it. So you just gotta hope for the best, I guess. You know.
Well, this is what perfect example.
But see, the fatalistic attitude that I have is the same one that, like, Stephen King, despite his popularity and all of his money, is in the exact same position as me. But he can just get through to, he can get retweeted enough that Trump notices and turns him off.
That is just crazy. He actually blocked him, man.
That's awesome.
But yeah, they're all the same. You know, I always go back to when I worked at Halliburton and the whole McKindle thing was going on. In the same time, in the public, you know, everything the public was seeing, Halliburton and BP were going at it. BP was wanting to sue Halliburton, all this other stuff. Behind closed doors, we still had 20 plus people working inside of BP's offices. We still had contracts we were negotiating for, you know, the next 10 years. It was business as usual.
Oh.
Except for what the public saw.
Of course.
Same shit.
So let's get into some, like, murder. That's more interesting.
Murder. Isn't it the funnest word that you ever heard of?
So, sometimes you have a lone killer. Other times he goes home and he asks for help hiding the body. And then that inspires that other family member that they're like, well, why am I holding a shovel? Why don't I get in on this too? Like, I'm doing all the work with none of the fun. So, we decided to talk about it. And then sometimes they're just damn hungry.
Yeah, you got food.
So which one do you want to start with?
Well, I don't want to start with my favorite one, so we'll stay away from these folks right here. But let's go ahead. I want to do these last because that's one of my favorite ones. Let's start with one of the homegrown ones to the state of Texas. Let's talk about the Sawyer family.
All right.
The Sawyer family was from the lovely movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Family of cannibals that... due to the economy in the area, they had to find a way to eat. And the easiest way to find a way to eat was to find people passing through town.
And they sold that chili.
Yes, yeah, sold that chili. And it stewed with the big chunks of meat in it.
So you've seen all of the, you know, like all of the, not necessarily the reboots, but you've seen all of the series.
I've seen all of them.
All of them killed.
I don't remember them totally, incredibly well, except the first one. I've seen that one the most, but.
But all of them killed.
Yeah, everybody.
It wasn't just Leatherface.
That's all of them killed or accepted it. You know, some of the later ones of the reboots. You know, the women were there, just with a woman tied to the table,
just processing the meat.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is a kind of misconception that Leatherface is the one. He is one of the ones.
Well, yeah, they all.
And he's actually, for the most part, he's kind of the punching bag. He's kind of the muscle, but he's not the leader of the group.
We know a few of the families that we're going to talk about have that person, that one guy that if they're having trouble with somebody, call him in, he'll take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely Leatherface. Yeah, they had a barbecue business where they go ahead and sell food. They was just an incredibly dysfunctional family.
See, the word dysfunctional.
Yeah, I can see what you'd say.
They work together just fine.
Yeah.
They achieve their goals. Until the damn kids come and mess up all their plans.
And of course Leatherface dancing around in the dress at one point and wearing other people's faces as always. As think about those times, you know, you got Thanksgiving going on, you're young, and some of the kids start performing, doing singing and dancing. So same shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same shit, just a different style.
Hey, you know, hang out with vegans long enough, I go from like omnivorous to almost cannibalistic, like within a few seconds.
Okay, where do you want to go to next?
Oh. Well, there's not many of them in the family, but there wouldn't be a Friday if it wasn't for Pamela and Jason Voorhees.
Yes, and that was definitely in the genes.
Oh, yeah. So, that was kind of a mother-son thing. They never really did talk about his dad, but, you know, that's some mama love right there.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, it broke her heart so much of what happened to her child. She was bound and determined to get revenge for him. You know, it's...
And then he watched her die, and then he went after him, you know, so... Don't be having sex, kids.
Not at camp. Make sure you take care of those little ones. They're all safe and sound. I'll go ahead and go to this one next, since you don't know a whole lot about it. The Coffins, which were the psychotic mother and two-son trio from Mother's Day by Trauma Incorporated, which was just a wackadoo movie. These three women decide to have a girls' weekend, go camping, which happens all the time with women from the city. They decide to go rough it.
Yeah, right.
And they're kidnapped and sexually assaulted, and one of them murdered, and the other two get away by the Coffin family. This mother, she encourages her son to go ahead, her sons to go ahead and do what they got to do. Take care of that business. It's a trauma movie. You know, it is what it is. I love them. They're stupid. They make no sense. They're so bad, they're good, as they say.
When's the last time you saw Frailty?
It's been a while.
So
definitely,
that was written and directed and acted by Bill Paxton.
Right,
it really is a. It's a chilling movie. I mean, it really, really is frightening.
I've been trying to find a copy of it every time I go looking at movies, but, just so check it out again. And
but that's the Meeks family. So Frailty. It's very highly respected, but it's not anywhere near on the Friday the 13th level as far as familiarity. So basically, you've got a single dad, and he's got two boys. One's like 10 or 11, and one's like 8 or 9. So they're not too far apart, but you got an older brother and a younger brother. And the father sees a vision and is instructed by God to destroy demons. And he's given a vision. He sees an axe and a pair of gloves in a barn, and he goes and he picks up that axe and a pair of gloves, and then he goes around killing people.
Right.
And he's essentially just a psycho murderer guy, and his sons are brought along with him, and he's constantly spouting this pseudo-religious. It's not even pseudo-religious. I mean, he really did think that he saw a vision from God. But he's talking about how, you know, the demons are real, they're coming, and we have to do our part, and we have to destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just these two boys coming to terms with the fact that either their father is telling the truth, which is that there are really legitimately demons that need to be killed, or their father's a crazy psychopath.
Right.
And one boy believes it, and the other one doesn't. And it's really, really chilling.
Mm-hmm.
And has the late, great Powers Booth in it.
Okay.
As a police detective. Phenomenal movie. Kind of a slow burn, but well worth it.
Mm-hmm. What I was just looking at, I was trying to remember the name of it, and just this scene from when I was younger, I remember it was just horrifying. It wasn't technically a horror movie, but Deliverance, the mountain family in Deliverance that ended up catching them on the riverbank. You know, those are two brothers, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, that those were psychotics. And going off on that tangent of the mountain people, the movie Wrong Turn, which...
I'm talking about the mountain people. My uncle, shout out to my uncle Ron. I just gave him the link, so he might download this. This episode might be his first episode of Distance 2. Or he might listen to a couple other ones and decide that this isn't for him. But anyway... he lives up in Kentucky, and his wife's family is, like, extended family is Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got so many crazy stories about, and that's not her family. It's not like her brother, but it's like her second cousin or just like, you know, but just weird, like, she's got entire chunks of her family that are off the grid up in the mountains and just like. But he's got this one story about this guy who, like, he came down out of the mountains one time because he was hurt. Like, something was wrong. So he came down out of the mountains, went to the hospital, checked himself in. They're like, you have, like, stage 4 cancer. You need...
He's got a 4-pound tumor.
Yeah. On the other side. Like, you need serious medical attention. And he's like, okay, well, can you fix my foot? And they fixed his foot, like, they casted it up or did whatever needed to be done. And he got up and left. He walked out of the hospital and just went back into the mountains. And, like, 3 or 4 years later, he comes back down again because he had some other problem, but he's still kicking.
There's lots of people that are off the grid like that, too, man. I remember when I was younger, I was probably 14 or 15, cousin of my brother, ex-brother-in-law, he can't remember what branch of the military he was in, but he was stationed up around North Carolina, South Carolina area. And he went out in the mountains and found him the best looking woman he could out in the hills and decided to make her a city girl. And that was a failed experiment, to say the least. Because she got to Louisiana and she didn't know anybody, and they're very dependent on family, they're very codependent on family, and you know, they stick together. And it was just, it made his life miserable. She was beautiful, didn't know shit. She never got adjusted to it and everything, and she's just miserable. But yeah, there's tons of people that live out in the hills like that, man. In Louisiana, there's places you can go to, like way out in the sticks, where that's where they've always lived. They're not going to live anywhere else. They, you know, take a trip to town every once in a while, make groceries, and that's it.
Well, you mentioned Deliverance, but have you ever seen a movie called Southern Comfort?
I know the name is real familiar.
It's quite similar to Deliverance in that basically it's an Army Reserve group.
Mm-hmm.
They're out doing their weekend warrior thing, and they get caught on one side.
Is it on Netflix?
Probably.
I think I may have seen it on years.
But anyway, they get on one side of the creek and they can't get to the other side, so they decide to borrow a boat. They find a boat and they decide to borrow it. And so they get in this boat and they're paddling across the river. They kind of leave like an IOU or whatever, but it's more like, if we take the boat from here to here, you're gonna see it. We're not stealing it, but we're just crossing the river. But they get out in the middle, and the guys who own the boat come walking out, and one of them shoots one of the guys in the boat, one of the army guys, is like, watch this, let's spook them. And he just squeezes off his machine gun. So the swamp guys, you know, get down, and they're all laughing or whatever. And swamp guys hop up and shoot back and kill one of them, like plink him off the boat. And then the whole rest of the time, it's these Army Reserve guys with blanks being hunted by this like deep swamp.
People don't give a shit, man. You know, Bassmaster, I used to bass fish, like I mentioned before, is a tournament fish, and Bassmasters tried to do a tournament one time on the Atchafalaya Basin. And you know, I used to have a camp out there, and you know, somebody's camp, their area, that's their shit. You know, we would plant trees, we'd drop trees under the water and cement buckets and everything, so we'd have tops where we'd have structure for fish to live in and stuff. And people guarded that shit. I remember they tried to do that Bassmasters tournament, and people were shooting at the boats when they get close to their tops. We call them tops. They get close to the tops, they start shooting at the boats. And they'd have to take off. They never did another tournament over there again, man. That was it. But in the series Wrong Turn, which has had 3 movies so far, we've been introduced to family members such as Sawtooth, Three Finger, One Eye, gotta love those nicknames, Pa, Ma, Brother and Sister. You know, you gotta keep it original, you gotta think of it. You know,
yeah.
You make sure you keep it going. Three Toe, Optimus Prime, Manny just joking, dude. There's no Transformers there. Three Finger still roams the woods. He was never caught, so I'm sure there's going to be a sequel sometime soon. But essentially, it's about people getting misdirected into the woods and being devoured by people, which sounds like a familiar storyline with some other movies, too. I'll let you take that one next.
The Shawnee Bean?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my son actually brought up that today. He said, you ever heard of this? I was like, I'm so glad that you've discovered that. So, you know, he's gone and searched for his own information.
Well, the very similar one was The Hills Have Eyes.
Yes.
Which is based off the Shawnee Bean.
Yeah.
Which is...
We've went over...
We've talked about it multiple times. Yeah. Just family of cannibals eating folks.
Hiding out in the mountains. Didn't find them for over a decade. And they just... A huge inbred family with a whole bunch of members.
You ever see that episode of The X-Files? With the... It was only shown once. It's the scariest episode of The X-Files. where it's like the inbred family, and then you got the mother.
I've never seen it, but I remember hearing about it. I remember somebody bringing it
up. I remember seeing that when it first came out, and like it was just on a weekly episode, and I remember just being terrified. Because basically, you got these redneck kids that are just, you know, they're murdering people or whatever, and Scully and Mulder get to the house, and they're like, you know, it's all dramatic. They got their guns out, and they're all like, and then they hear something, and there's like this, what do you call it? The rollaways that you get under a car, the little trolleys.
Oh yeah, I got one outside. I don't know what the official name for it is.
But they get in, there's like one of those under the bed, and they pull it out, and this chick's got no arms and no legs.
Oh shit!
And she they pull her out, and she comes out screaming like, ah! And turns out that they've just been
eating on her,
no, boning her,
oh,
and making new babies.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
this sounds like some Hills Have Eyes shit.
It's gross. It is pretty gross, and it was terrifying. And they never showed it again in reruns. Like, you can only get it on a special edition DVD. Okay.
I'm going to have to look for that.
It's rough, dude.
I'm sure it's somewhere in the deep web. You get to one of those addresses that's numbers instead of numbers and shit. .co, you leave the M off. That's where it'll be. Okay, been there. I'll bring up this one also. It's one of my favorite movies. Just, I don't know why I love People Under the Stairs so much, but it's just, I think it's mainly because of the plot of it. I enjoyed it a lot. The movie wasn't the best done, but it was a cool movie. But the Robsons in that movie, and when you watch it, it looks as though initially that it's a husband, wife, and a daughter, and then you find out that it's a brother and sister who kidnapped a little girl and decided to raise her as their own. Sick individuals. And those people, have you seen People Under the Stairs?
A long time ago.
You know, they kidnap children. And they keep them. They don't necessarily kill them. They just keep them as captives. They cut out their tongues so they can't make noise, and they keep them under the stairs. And they cut out their tongues in case people come over, they don't hear any kids running around.
Right.
And there's one that has escaped and lives in the walls because the house is incredibly secure as far as the windows go. Can't go any further than that, so he just runs around through the walls and everything, and they send their Rottweiler after him every once in a while. It's a, like I said, the storyline behind the movie is really original. That's why I liked it so much. But they dress up in bondage gear all the time and shit, and it was just the weirdest family, man.
Keep it in the family.
Where do you want to go next?
Jaws 3. That's a
that's lineage, I guess you could say.
That's a family thing going on. So for those of you who have not seen the epic that is Jaws 3 or Jaws 3D if you've got the glasses, movie starts off and it's at SeaWorld in Florida, and a shark gets into the park, and they catch it. Like, it kills a couple people, and then they catch it. And it's not a very big one, and they've got it on display, but then it goes belly up in the middle of a performance. You know, like, a whole bunch of people are watching it, and it dies. But then the shark attacks continue, but it's a bigger one. And they conclude that it's the damn shark's mother.
It's mama. She ain't happy. You mess with her baby.
Yeah, because sharks are known for that kind of warm maternal instinct.
Mama bears ain't got shit on a mama shark.
But yeah, and then she starts attacking the aquatics and breaking stuff and drowning people and eating people whole. It's great.
You know, SeaWorld, it's always fascinated me that, you know, they think they can tame these animals. Like, every time I see an orca attack, I'm like, did you think anything else would happen?
You know, there's a phrase. I've heard of many iterations of it over the years, but now I've got it, like, just heard it the other day. It's like very quite simplified down to it's simple and elegant, and it's called play stupid games, get stupid prizes.
Just like the video you posted on the Facebook page today of the guy deciding to catch the alligator with his members only jacket.
Yep. Play stupid games, get stupid prizes.
Yeah,
that dude was so lucky.
Didn't
bite his arm off.
He was moving so slow away from, he like stopped and just chilled out for a second. I'm like, dude, get up and run, man.
If you want to see that video, go to Scary Dad's Haunted Forum, and you'll see that. Stupid.
Stupid is, stupid does. Okay, you want to talk Near Dark?
Let's talk about Near Dark.
A very cool movie with two of our favorites, Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you go through a little background on it.
Well, it's just a... It's not a blood family, but it's an adoptive family.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton's character, Severin, you know, join this family of vampires, and he's just they're all just evil, and they're just kind of they get into the I guess it's the diner or the restaurant or whatever, and they just start taking people out one by one, and they're just kind of playing with them like a cat plays with their food.
Yeah,
and
because they enjoy it, it's sadistic.
Yeah, so again, not blood family, but again, if you're gonna kill somebody, you gotta have somebody, you know, to help you hide the bodies, or
and they're also very very strong on the family unit as far as you take care of each other, you protect each other, and,
absolutely.
Yeah,
it's more of a gang,
mm-hmm.
but still they're a band of bros.
And before we move on to the other one, one of the things I just thought about, which I didn't write down, was the Roman family of gypsies from Thinner. Yeah. Those were some crazy bastards. And scary too. The idea of having to just come face to face and having to deal with those people being upset with you would not be a good thing.
No, I can't imagine that any good can come out of
that. You had the hot granddaughter. Her hot-headed husband, and then you had Grandpa that just he was the one that knew how to take care of things and protect everybody. You know, you need me to take care of that? I got that.
Yeah, there's a lot in that that gypsy culture that's just very, very,
very mysterious, very secretive.
Mm-hmm.
I've run across gypsies here in Houston twice, like when they come in to do work after storms, stuff like that, but you never see them. You know, you know they're there and everything, but
they've got their wagons.
Yeah, yeah, they got wagons and
their big earrings,
their skirts,
their babushka outfits.
A babushka, not even a babushka. Okay, who else you got? Because I'm down to my last one.
Other than Mama Bates and Norman,
yes,
Psycho.
Yes, yeah.
Again, you didn't really see much of her. She wasn't quite animated, but she apparently disapproved a lot of Norman. So,
okay,
I'm thinking of like the Mama from the Train. He's like,
God, you quote that movie so much, man.
Hey, man,
Owen doesn't have any friends. He's just shy. He's not shy. He's fat and stupid. She was the sweetest lady, so encouraging her husband. She's running through the train. There's a murderer on the train. What's wrong with you people? Mrs. Lentz. Okay. One of our favorites, which is the brainchild of one of our favorite creators in the genre, by far, the Fireflies. House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil Rejects, they are a truly psychotic family.
Mm-hmm.
They take it above and beyond, that's for sure.
Those two movies, man.
when I saw House of a Thousand Corpses the first time, I was like, just the opening scene with Kevin Spaulding, the two guys come in to rob him and stuff. I was like, holy shit, this is the baddest horror movie I've seen in years. I mean, it was incredible. The scene was great. The acting was great. The casting was awesome. You know, the little old character actor, I can't remember his name, but he's been in a ton of movies. The old guy that went to the bathroom and stuff. He was perfect in that role. And you know, he was in it. He was, you know, one of the primary characters up until the killing started.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see him again. He just disappears.
Good old Captain Spaulding with that big old revolver.
And it's when you first see that personality, and I was just drawn to it. He didn't give a shit.
You just, and they all take care of each other too. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah. The family unit is a very strong thing with them.
And they obviously put up with each other's fetishes.
Yeah,
it's like, what's his name? That's got all the dead cheerleaders.
It's Otis.
He's got the dead cheerleaders. He's got the live ones in the cage and the dead ones in his bed.
Now, Baby and Otis do fight a lot, especially in Devil's Rejects. But
well,
in the end, they take care of each other.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they save each other.
She just wanted some Tutti Frutti ice cream, for God's sake. I don't see any ice cream in your fucking future. The next scene, they're eating Tutti Frutti ice cream.
Give me a B. Give me an A. Give me a B.
What's that spell?
What's that spell?
But yeah, it's just you want to know so much more about the family, you know, because you don't know hardly shit about them.
Uh-huh.
Your grandpa never showed up again after the first one, too, which kind of made me disappointed because he was a good... good extra character. And when he did the when it was Showtime and he's telling the joke about the mother-in-law, which I don't know if you ever heard that whole joke, but if you look at the DVD, you can see him tell the whole joke.
Oh yeah,
yeah, it's a pretty good joke. I'll save it for later. I'll let you know what it is because it's kind of disgusting. But and I always quote when him and Otis are watching the Munsters. And he's doing a race with the Dracula. And the grandpa goes, "Put me behind the wheel of that bitch. I'll show you some driving." Otis pulls the gun out at him and everything. It's,
just thinking of old Captain Spaulding with his, like, he's not clowned out. He's just in the hotel with his girlfriend. And they're, like, just banging and the phone rings. He's like, "What? Oh, God."
"Did you get enough ass slapping last night?"
God,
His teeth all fucked up. He's in his dirty, tiny white. He's in, she's wanting some ass banging.
Good old.
And then he slaps on his clown makeup and he turns into Captain Spaulding, man. Yep. The part where he carjacks that family. I actually got it on the soundboard where he tells the kid, he goes, "If you don't figure out a reason why you don't like clowns, when I come back, I'm killing you and your whole family." It's the reason people are afraid of clowns. That is the reason. Shit like Captain Spaulding in it, man.
He's got the advertisement for the fried chicken.
Get a piece of tasty fried chicken.
It's just one of those things, like, I couldn't understand. Like, you have a roadside attraction, but then you kill anybody that comes in. It's like, how do you make money?
Well, there are the locals, they get gas, because if you notice at the beginning, the sheriff, who ends up coming back later, he's getting gas at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And, just the way they melded that movie in together was great. There weren't a whole lot of characters, but they were great, man.
Well, with corpses, it was that they stopped in at the thing and they got gas and food or whatever, and then
they wanted to see the Deadwood mystery. Well, they took the serial killer tour.
Yeah, but then they were driving and they popped their tires and made their car stop, and then they're like, "Oh, we're trapped here," and then they got
them. Well, they were saying that what happened is during the tour, they talked about Dr. Satan, and they hung him from this tree a stone throws away. And they wanted to see that damn tree.
That's
when he gave him the directions and just led him right to where they needed to be. Baby was waiting.
And the reveal that Dr. Satan was a real thing.
With his little contraption to be able to move his arms and everything, man. That was just, that's great makeup for sure. And then Tiny, the makeup on Tiny was real cool too. That gentleman passed away too. The guy that played Tiny.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing cons for a little bit. And I want to say he died about 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, wow. No good.
And at the end of Devil's Rejects, just another thing about family, they were like, "Tiny, are you sure you're going to be okay?" And he's like, "Yeah." And they're like, "We'll come back for you." But the thing about it is, in Devil's Rejects, I love the way they did it, because you saw Tiny, the first scene you see Tiny walking through, you don't see him again until the end. You forget that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes out to save the day, it's like,
yeah, he's on the chilling on him. He gives you goosebumps.
Well, what it is, she's about to be killed by the sheriff's brother.
Well, that's
and Tiny comes behind and just one move cracks his neck.
Well, that's just what I mean, like, but he was just gone, and then he shows up to, like, you're like, this is the end of the movie. The sheriff's got them cold, and they deserve it. So you're just going to watch the sheriff go, you know, have his fun with each one, and then Tiny comes out of nowhere and just, like...
But isn't it amazing how Rob Zombie could actually take you and make them sympathetic characters until you're happy they get saved at the end? And then they get shot, but yeah, just they get out of the fire, and you feel good about it.
Yeah, you're kind of
Tiny,
like,
saved the day.
Yeah. They'll live for another movie. Oh, I guess not.
Never mind. They just wanted to play one song. It's okay. But yeah, the Fireflies are great. You know, them all being named after characters from the Marx Brothers and stuff was really cool. That came out in the Devil's Rejects part, and it because you know, you don't really realize that Spaulding is Baby's dad in the first one. You don't really find it out to the second one. You just think that he's just friends with him and stuff.
Yeah,
and the Rob Zombie song kind of came out and said who everybody was related. But it's an awesome movie. Great horror family, that's for sure.
Just love Otis and Devil's Rejects. I love how that is, like, he just tears off that dude's face. He just, like, comes home with their father's face on.
Yeah.
It's like,
rah, rah, rah. It starts kissing the daughter.
Yeah. Horrible. Horrible stuff.
Yeah, horrible stuff, but that's what makes it so good. And then, you know, in Devil's Rejects, when he's bringing the guys out to kill him, so they can dig up the guns, and then he's going to kill them and everything. He's just, he's talking so much crap, man. It's nuts. the one where he was terrorizing the daughter with the with his wife with the gun, put it between her legs. He's like, and my gun still has a little bit of that stink on it. I'm like, man, that's just cold blooded, dude. Leave him alone. And then he tells him, you know, he does that little speech, which this is, it just gives you chills when he says it. He's like, you know, I'm here to do the devil's work. Yeah. They truly believe that shit, man.
Well, and like Baby, she's got her moments of like, you know, because she's pretty and she's sassy and she's got, you know, she's sadistic, but she, but then whenever she's like, what's her name from Three's Company starts to make a move on her and she turns around and like hits her with that knife. It's mm-hmm. just like thump. She's skilled too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, she could kill for sure, man. So, you know, when the first one, whenever they're going to give the victims to Dr. Satan, you know, I almost think they release one of them so she can go track race her down and run rabbit. And she got him and killed her. She don't mess around. Baby didn't play. Now, I do wish, you know, the whole gunfight with Diamond Dallas Page. Well, not really the gunfight, but Diamond Dallas Page and what's his name? Danny Trejo. That scene, I think, could have been done a little bit better. They should have fought back a little bit more than that, but it is what it is. It was still a great movie.
Yeah. That, are you talking about with Tyler Mane when he's in the...
Whenever they were at his brother's... whorehouse.
Yeah.
And Diamond Dallas Page show up in the middle of the night. They just walk in, start killing people, and you know, next thing you know, they throw him Spalding through a window. But he was pretty high. He was pretty messed up. But but still, it's funny because Captain Spalding, even as high as he was and messed up, he was still talking shit.
Oh yeah.
He could not stop talking shit. Love hate on each hand. And that guy was a trip, man. Love Captain Spalding. I wanted to be him for Halloween one year.
you're about 50 pounds too light.
Yeah, I know. But it is this little undershirt you can wear and stuff.
I think that's going to do it.
Who are your favorite families when it comes to horror movies? This is a ton more that we didn't talk about. There's the Brothers from Blood Diner. There's a whole lot we didn't bring up, but it, they're out there. We just wanted to talk about a few of our favorites and see what you guys thought about them as well.
It's time to bone up on some family movies. Next time your wife's like, let's sit around and watch a family movie. You're like, well, there's 9 or 10 Friday the 13th. Yeah. 1,000 Corpses, Devil's Rejects. Yeah, we'll be here for a while.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we can throw some stuff on. Now, my son had the argument when he was helping me with my research today that the Manson family should technically be considered a family, but I don't know, because they acted like a family unit.
Well, they weren't.
Yeah, it wasn't a fictional group.
It wasn't fictional, and they were a cult.
Yeah, that's what I told him.
It's
more of a brainwashing thing. It's not quite the same thing as what the families we're talking about are. These people that they went day to day as a happy family. They breakfast together and dinner together and shit at tables and stuff. You know, the dinner was sometimes human flesh, but it was still a family dinner.
Hey, you know, bacon, people bacon. What real difference does it make, right? All right, guys, that's it for today.
We're going to let you go.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We'll be coming at you soon with some more news and updates and fun stuff we got going on.
And we need to find somebody else to start trolling Trump, I guess, and see who's going to block next.
It'll be Dean Koontz.
Later.
Keep it scary, guys.
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played
songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like us, we had it made.
Those were the days. And you knew when you were there.
Dance for girls and men, women. Mister, we could use a man like Herbert Hoover again.